Maybe Kyle, if he gets there.
No, he ain't making.
He ain't? What happened?
No, he didn't say. He got going to bed like he said.
You know, he came and took me to Ralph and Cat Coos for Christmas.
Well, yeah, what did he eat up there? What did y'all eat up there?
Some kind of seafood stuff. I'm sure it was out, wasn't clean, but it was good. Well, but you know, it wasn't real bad. You got somebody behind you. If you feel something scratching on your rear end, it ain't me.
Well, that's good.
As
long as you see your hands, we'll
be all right. But he loves to wear up on people, you know. And
yeah,
he's a friendly cat. He loves everybody. I don't know why he likes Don, but.
Don's a likable guy.
Well, your cat's
trying
to cover up.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You get the prize for that.
You've only got your laugh over your thing.
Bill, have you talked to a lady anytime in the last year from Montreal, Canada, a lady named Janet? She listens in on the program some, and we talked about her coming down here and visiting, and I don't know if she's ever talked to you or not.
I don't think I ever spoke to her.
Well, she's going to be here Saturday.
Oh, yeah?
Wow. Yeah, and she's going to be here for maybe a month, and we're just going to kind of see if we're compatible as far as her staying here and whatnot, and if we get along and whatnot. And if we do, then she might stay down here permanently.
Okay.
She's in her 60s, and she's CI. And so, you know, we just kind of play it by ear. But I'm a little bit nervous and apprehensive about it. She's going to be here Saturday evening late, and then we'll go from there. But I didn't know if you'd ever talked to her or not.
Nope, never spoke to her. I don't think so, not as far as I know.
Well, I'm hoping for the best. Like I say, I really don't know her. We've talked a few times. She used to go in on Eli's program, you know, and listen in, and on Pastor Dan and listen in, and she's been doing that over a year. So, you know, I've been those. But anyway, it might work out to be a good deal, and you know, I'm hoping that it will. But the guys are going to have to clean up their act, because she'll be here on Thursday night. She's Christian Identity, and she'll be at the Bible study, so Don won't be able to tell his ugly jokes. Kind of. Maybe. But anyway, that's it. That's my news. And
did you ask her if she could cook?
Yeah, she can cook. She doesn't have a vehicle. That's the only drawback. She doesn't have a vehicle.
She probably still can't cook. Well, we could.
But she doesn't want to go anywhere. She just wants to stay, you know, at the house. She's a
grass? Regular? Do wonders?
Mark, my Skype thing isn't working.
She's been kind of a caregiver. She's not a nurse, but she's done some of that, and so, you know, just kind of thought maybe she might fit in, and we'll see. Anyway, y'all keep me in your prayers and whatnot.
I didn't hear Dad what they could cook regularly. Now that I'm, you know, Dad, that's what
her last name, Belle, is D-I-Z-O-N. What does that sound like to you?
She's in Montreal?
Yeah.
I know her. I always thought she was down south somewhere.
No, she's in Montreal, Canada.
All right. Yeah, I know her. I know her. I think I've spoken to her.
Well, I thought you had. You know anything bad about her?
No. She's not she's not a steady listener. She's on and off. But nah, I don't know anything bad about her. But yeah, she's emailed me over the years.
So she's a legitimate person.
She's always seemed like it.
Yeah, well, she seemed like it to me, too. And
I never knew she was in Montreal. Family. I always thought she was down south.
No. She's from Montreal. She's been up there. She lives all by herself, and it's not safe, you know, in those big cities. And she's living in an Italian community, and she's not real happy there.
And, yeah, it's a French name, I'm pretty sure, but she's
But she's one of us. I mean, I've seen her pictures. You know, she's not a raving beauty, but you know, neither am I. But she's not.
What are you laughing about?
She's not coming down here for that anyway. You know, it's just a friendship. But we're gonna see how it works. And Mark's gonna he's volunteered to pick her up at the bus station Friday evening, and he said Saturday evening, and he said that if she turns out to be a skag, he's gonna put her out on the side of the road. He's not gonna bring her all the way on in.
Okay.
Bizon.
Yeah,
Z is in Zimbabwe.
We'll have an old time Israelite wedding.
No, I'm not anticipating anything like that. But anyway, that's my news. That's pretty big news for me. You know, I'm getting set. She likes cats, and she knows about JJ.
Good.
She knew about Jocko before Jocko passed away. And
are you going to carry her over the threshold? That's what I'm kidding.
Well, I don't know how much weight this chair can. She's a petite lady. She's not a, you know, she doesn't weigh 300 pounds.
Well, that's a plus.
Tell me. But anyway, we're going to check it out and see how it all works out. She seems real nice. We'll be more.
Well, no, that's good. That's good. I'm glad. I hope it really works out for you. I really do.
We can't see nothing.
I have I picked up a van today, right? Well, I had it dropped off today. I bought a new van. Not a new van, a 2004 van, but it's like brand new.
Well, it's new to you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a hell of a lot better than my 93 Ford, and it'll be more dependable, and I plan on coming south in it soon, right?
Well, and then, too, see, if you stay down here very long, you can make some extra money transporting those Mexicans over the border back and forth.
Yeah, right.
You can put a lot of Mexicans in a van.
You can sleep in the van,
yeah,
while you're down here.
if this van was loaded up with Mexicans and I was driving it.
Oh, you know, I just
right into the swamp.
We're going to have to figure out what to do with Mr. Bill.
That's what I'm talking about. You got to sleep in his van.
No.
Done got your bed.
No, we can work out something. We can get a extra bed or something. And
well, that by that time, y'all might have to be sharing the same bedroom.
Anyway, don't you worry, Bill. We'll have you all fixed up.
Like them old women. They don't yell, they won't tell, they won't swell, they're grateful to hell.
Oh, my God.
That's
awful.
Oh, well.
Vizon. Don't tell me it's Jewish. That ain't the last. That's the last thing in the world I need to.
You sure you spelled it right?
Yeah, Janet, Dizon.
That's mustard. French would be Dijon.
I know it isn't. I can show you in the emails what it is.
All right.
No. In French, it would be Dijon. That's mustard, Gerald. I hope you like mustard.
Yeah.
That's a herb.
But anyway, does anybody have anything they want to bring to the table before we?
No, we eat all that.
Yeah, we had Fulton brought us chicken and dumplings and some pear cobbler, which was very, very good. We really enjoyed it. We're gonna feed you. We're gonna fatten you up when you get down here, Bill.
Chicken and dumplings. I'm on my way now. Chicken and dumplings is that sounds like a real redneck meal.
Oh, we're gonna fix you up.
Was it fried chicken and dumplings?
We'll see that you get that. I'm going to fix your chicken and dressing, Mosley style.
Diane's going to fix your turnip greens.
Ooh. Yeah, we're going to fill you up with collard greens and turnip greens and bread. Yeah, you have to give him some bread.
Yankees don't eat no greens.
We're going to bring you lunch, him, boy. Fix your butter beans, black eyed peas. You have a pound of cornbread every night, you know. We'll fix you up, Bill.
As long as there ain't no bacon sausage and gravy.
Oh, we always use bacon grease for anything we cook. You know, back in the South, back during the Civil War, you know, and all that whole period, you know, of course, they kill all their meat products and everything. And, of course, pig was, unfortunately, a big part of it. You know, they made lard out of the pig, and they use that lard in cooking everything.
Fatback and
that's probably why they didn't live all that long.
Head cheese.
But I'm glad we don't do that now.
Hope you don't eat no head cheese.
Was nothing wrong with them either.
Yeah.
But the biggest part of Louisiana population, they don't admit it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Amen. Yeah.
Well, yeah. What are we doing tonight? What are we playing with tonight? Where are we going? Where are we headed?
We finished Jude.
Yeah.
And the question is now, you know, do we back up and go somewhere else, or do we start in on Revelation? We've done Revelation. What do y'all want to do? Let's hear it.
Hey, Bill, send me a Skype call, please.
What do y'all want to do? I mean, what is there a particular book?
Randy can just say.
Randy, what do you think? What would you like for us to do?
He's a head deacon.
Anything between covers, that's good to me.
Well, I mean, is there a particular book that we'd like to go back and visit? We've done the whole Bible. Well, we've done the whole Bible now, haven't we?
No, we didn't do some of them books in the Old Testament.
Well, I thought we did.
Well, some of them like Chronicles.
Are you sure?
Yeah, that's good. First Chronicles. One Chronicles, two Chronicles. We didn't go through that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's do First Chronicle. And is that all right with you, Bill?
We could go anywhere you want.
As long as we don't go to the Lake of Fire, I'm all right. I can't handle that Lake of Fire.
Chronicles ain't done, I know, because it's a book that's got a lot of stuff in it.
And then we're hitting Bill. Cole hadn't had a chance to look over this.
He probably been studying it today.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have my own translation of it.
not yet, anyway.
Right.
Is that Kyle?
No, I don't know who it is yet.
Book of Chronicles.
You know, this probably really isn't the Chronicles of the Kings, right?
Well, tell us what you know about it before we start.
Well, you know, I've read a lot of different things about it, but I really think that it was a compilation of the original Chronicles that was made from diverse records later on. And it's oriented more towards Judah than it is towards Israel. And because there are records in Chronicles that were made after the deportations of Israel, that then Chronicles certainly belong to Judah. That this is my unstudied extemporaneous opinion, right? And it was probably, a lot of people credit the Ezra the scribe as being the compiler of Chronicles after the return from Babylon. Now that is probably most plausible, but I wouldn't necessarily attributed it to Ezra alone, but you know, he was known as a scribe, and he probably had a hand in it, being part of the one of the leading forces. I mean, there were other people, but one of the leading forces behind the restoration of the temple. It only makes sense that they would have wanted to have a readable compilation of their past history. And I believe that's what Chronicles is. I think Kings is also mostly an after-the-fact compilation of the ancient kingdom records. But Kings is from a slightly different perspective from Chronicles, and I believe it was made independently of Chronicles. Now, we really don't know who made any of these compilations, but they're almost certainly after-the-fact compilations of somebody that had a lot of the old kingdom records and wanted to put them in a summary that people could share and read. And I believe that's what Kings and Chronicles both are. And a lot of the Book of Kings, the perspective of the Book of Kings is almost like a first-hand perspective until you get to about 2 Kings chapter 18, chapter 17, and it's done in a retrospect where somebody's writing about events that had taken place in the past and they're writing about it further into the future, rather than more like a chronicle, which is a daily or weekly or monthly compilation of things that happened. And it could have been yearly, right? Compilation of things that happened in the kingdom. They must have had much more in-depth records at one time, and those much more in-depth records must have been lost or destroyed along the way, and these summaries survived. And that seems to be what these are. The books of Kings and the books of Chronicles are summaries of the events that took place in these kingdoms that were made after the fact. From original records, I'm certain. It's definite that they had original records. And the books Kings and Chronicles both complement each other. I think Chronicles is older and fuller than Kings in some respects, and in other respects it's wanting. We need them both. I believe that Kings and Chronicles are two witnesses to the ancient kingdom, that it really did exist. And what's really pitiful is that the Jews, and not all of them, but a great preponderance of Jewish scholars are denying that this kingdom ever existed. Which is absolutely ridiculous, because we have all these Assyrian inscriptions dug out of the ground that talk about how this kingdom was conquered by the Assyrians and taken away. So the kingdom definitely existed, without a doubt. But the Jews, in their arrogance and because their own specialties are so pigeonholed, their own studies are so pigeonholed and not general at all, And because archaeologists somehow think that they could write history, which is absolutely ridiculous, archaeologists should never be allowed to write history, that they actually dispute and argue over the existence of this kingdom. And therefore, a lot of the Jewish archaeologists will claim that Ezra and Nehemiah are figures from the 5th century that invented these chronicles to give their Judean state an ancient and noble identity, and to give these mixed races of people in Judea a peculiar national identity, and that's just a lie. And the Assyrian inscriptions and the Babylonian inscriptions prove that that's a lie. But they get off doing that, but because when you look at the ancient world, when you look at ancient Israel, you really don't find Jews. Well, when you go back in archaeology, when you look at the oldest archaeology in Palestine, you really don't find Jews as we know Jews. And the finding is because the archaeology is not Jewish enough for them, then they doubt the veracity of the records, because they expect to find Jews when they look back at ancient history and through the archaeology, and they really don't find them. Not Jews as we know Jews today. But that's they're arrogant enough to expect to find themselves 3,000 years ago in ancient Jerusalem, and they're just looking in the wrong places, right?
That's probably why they won't allow DNA testing on old remains that they're digging up over there. You know, the Jews won't let anybody come in and do DNA sampling.
Well, right, and it's really hypocritical because they search openly for mass graves in Europe and take DNA testing to determine whether or not the inhabitants of the graves are Jews. And then in Palestine, that they prevent people from wanting to dig up bodies out of the ground and test them. So it's really hypocritical. Now they do prevent people in Europe, once they've been identified as Jews, from digging in the ground after people. But that's only once they've been identified as Jews. If they were for one second thought that they weren't Jews under the ground, they wouldn't care who dug what. It's that they have a lot of double standards, and it's very hypocritical. But I believe the Chronicles was probably compiled in the 5th century B.C., in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, not necessarily by Ezra and Nehemiah, and it was compiled at that time from ancient records. And we do have, another witness in Menander of Ephesus who had translated the Chronicles of Ancient Tyre from Hebrew into Greek. But those are lost to us. But we know from that, and we have historical record of Josephus in that, and we know from that keeping chronicles of a city, and yet, in records similar to this, which Josephus quoted at length from the ancient Chronicles of Tyre, which are lost now, well, keeping the chronicles of a governmental entity at that time was a popular endeavor. It was something that was conducted, which lends further credence to these books. And to have the Chronicles of Tyre, which from reading where Josephus quotes from them, actually read a lot like these books of Chronicles we have in the Bible. They were very similar from what we could see in Josephus's quotes. And for that reason, that we know that this practice was done, that these chronicles were kept in this manner, and these couldn't have been an invention, because we have many historical inscriptions in Assyria and Babylon dug out of the ground that tells us, they tell us that these kings existed. Many of these Hebrew kings, I mean the later kings, of course, Hosea, Omri, Hezekiah, Manasseh, these kings are mentioned in these Assyrian and Babylonian inscriptions that were dug out of the ground 500 miles away. So there's no doubt that these records aren't real. They're very real. They're absolutely real. They're just a later compilation of something that what we could only wish that we could have. The originals, right? Which may be uncovered somewhere yet. But if a Jew uncovers them, you could bet that you'll never see them. You'll never see them until the Jews get to them and they could make disappear anything that makes them uncomfortable, I'm sure. That would be my bet. Now, the Greek Septuagint doesn't call the Chronicles Chronicles. It calls the books of Chronicles paralipsomenon. Paralipsomenon means matters omitted. Now, the Greek Septuagint was translated from about 280 BC. That's about 300 years after, I'm sorry, 200 years after the time of Nehemiah, who was about 490 BC. So 200 years after the time of Nehemiah, the Chronicles were called paralipomenon, or matters omitted, what would be a way to translate that, by the Septuagint translators. So that may be that may indicate, since that tradition is almost as old as Chronicles themselves, that may indicate that the compiler of Chronicles was familiar with the books of Kings and thought that the summary wasn't complete enough and that he had records that perhaps made up for some of the things that weren't recorded in Kings, and that's why he created the summary that we know as Chronicles. So that's what that name indicates to me, that the writer of Chronicles had his own ancient records or his own copies of the scriptures of the Chronicles of Israel and Judah, and he didn't think that the writer of Kings, that the Chronicles that we find in Kings were complete enough, so he is trying to make his own summary that includes, and there's some things in Chronicles that aren't in Kings, and vice versa, and he's trying to make his own summary that makes up for some of the things missing in Kings, and that's what that name indicates to me. Paralipomenon, matters omitted. That's what they're called in Greek.
Well, we often think that we got everything that they had, but that's pretty obvious that we do not.
Right, absolutely.
Kind of like we were talking about with Balaam, you know, it was obvious that the writers along about that time knew well what Balaam had taught Israel, but you don't get that from the book of Numbers. You know, they got that somewhere else, you know, but they knew what it was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there's things in, like Clifton found one, I forget off the top of my head where exactly what it is. I think it's in Joshua or Judges. It might be in the book of Judges. And there's a battle, and there's the result of the battle was that a certain amount of men in Israel, I think it was something to do with, like, their left eyes were put out. That one of the kings of the Amorites or one of those Canaanite kings had conquered, had been able to overcome a certain number of Israelites from a given tribe and put out so many of their of either their left eye or their right eye or something to that effect, and it's a very incomplete account in the book as we have it. However, Josephus records the same account and records the entire account, and I'm not sure if the Septuagint does, but Clifton pointed that out in one of his papers, where if you walk into this chapter in the King James, you're wondering, like, what the hell happened here? Why is that going on? Why are these, you know, how did these guys get themselves into this predicament? But you turn to Josephus and you see the whole story, right? And I think that's in the Septuagint also. But if you just read the King James, you're just left to wonder how these guys got themselves into this predicament in the first place. So there's definitely many records that are, especially in the historical books, that are missing, that we don't have. We see through a glass darkly. Well, we certainly do. If we had all the records that you know, the Kings and Chronicles at one time represented, then we would have a perfectly clear, I'm sure, my opinion is we would have a perfectly clear vision of who we are and who these ancient Israelites are. And it would be unmistakable. But I think they've been chopped to hell. And I think that Yahweh permitted them to be chopped to hell because of his punishment and that he judged against us, which consisted of blindness. And we were to be blind to who we are. And it's very evident that we certainly are blind to who we are. And we have been for a long time.
I've always thought, or for a long time, I've believed that Ezra and Nehemiah had a lot more evidence for against interracial marriages and against the miscegenation that was taking place at that time, because they were able to convince the people so easily. When you see the repentance that they had and sending their own children and their own wives back to their fathers, and then you see the record of what we have now, I've often thought he had much more evidence, as they had much more evidence at the time of how big of an atrocity that was, or how big, you know,
Well, you're right. They absolutely must have had much more evidence in the scriptures, because they were able to convince the people of their sin very easily. But you know something else? They also had the language, and they had to know what adultery meant, right? I mean, the plain language in the Ten Commandments. And that's good that you point that out, that they were able to convince the people so readily without any argument. It was without dispute.
Yeah. Nowadays, boy, you can't sit out somebody got halfway got their mind made up that all you got to do is be born again, you know. And you got, they won't listen to you.
Well, on my Euro forum today, it breaks my heart to hear it every time I hear it, but you hear it again and again. There's a wonderful older woman who has been listening to my programs since I've been home, and she's been reading Clifton and I for 10 years, and she's in England, and she said today on the Euro forum, and this woman's been, she's been associated with one form of Christian identity or another for a good 40 years. I mean, she started out with Herbert Armstrong and the Worldwide Church of God, and that was her stepping stone to Christian identity, as it is for many people. But she has a daughter, and her daughter has a son, and her son's dating a Pakistani girl, and she told her daughter about it, and her daughter shouted her down, she said. Her daughter shouted her down, saying there's nothing wrong with her son dating a Pakistani girl. It's just crazy. It's destruction, and these people have that they've enlisted for their own destruction. That our own race is beckoning and welcoming its own destruction. In race mixing. It's crazy.
Well, the churches down here are actually promoting, most of them are actually promoting it. They're going out of their way to promote it in their sermons and everything that they do.
They actually think they're doing God a favor. Those who kill you would think they're doing God a favor, and that's a manifestation of that. Yeah, you know, God couldn't make one big brown pile of mud out of creation. He had to make us all different races, so they're going to make the pile of mud for him because God needs help.
That's universalism, what people teach. It teaches you to more races out of Genesis 1 and 2, where all that comes from.
Yeah, right. Right out of the Gospel of Eli James. God made them all, so they're all good.
Most
identity people are just warmed over Baptists or warmed over Episcopalians that think they know a little bit about history.
It's amazing to me that we all can sit around here today and we can see what's happening to the races and how that they're blending together, and even they predict, you know, how many years it's going to take before you've got, you know, one race of people, because everybody's going to look the same and all the blood's going to get mixed up and all that. And the same group of people will look back at the beginning of what they believe is the beginning of history, and with Adam and Eve, and somehow or another they will create all of the races from Adam and Eve. So, you know, they understand, you know, that it goes the other way. And yet they insist that it didn't go the other way when it started, you know, that everything had to change, you know.
If you believe...
That doesn't make any sense.
It don't make any sense at all.
If you believe that Genesis 1 is a different creation, you should go back to church.
Well, maybe you should anyway.
Well, you know, because the bottom line is, when it comes to it, nothing matters. If you take Genesis 1 as a different creation, and Adam is a different... Well, you ain't doing no different than church.
That Adam is what now? Is
if you believe man is another creation or the beast of the field, you might as well go back to church, because you're no different than the church, because they teach everybody comes from Adam.
Adam was the first man.
Yeah.
And everybody came from Adam. They all teach that.
Yeah.
And yet they all can sit around and look at it, and they see what's happening today, and it's just like Donna said, it's ridiculous. You can't have it both ways. It's got to be one way or the other. Either you're becoming more defined in your differences, or you're becoming less defined in your differences. But it don't work both directions.
because, you know, what it boils down to is universalism.
Yeah. Well, they want to bring everybody in, mm-hmm. and that's the only way they can do it.
Well, it boils down to they want to be their own savior. They want to be their own God.
Yeah.
You know,
got to do something.
That you're able to earn grace, that you're able to become worthy of Yahweh's grace by doing what they say is. And if you can earn grace, then anyone can earn grace.
Yeah.
If it's earnable,
right.
you can.
That's
you know,
right.
if I can do it, then anyone who can repeat those
yeah.
steps that I tell you to do it can also earn it.
Mm-hmm.
Come on now.
All we're talking about here, if you teach what we teach, there won't be much more than what you see here, and no money. You know, there won't be any money coming that offer when he passes that thing. But when he says that, they gone.
I know you.
They gone.
I know you are, but I don't know about
that. That's part of the reason they don't.
Well, you're brown, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's all about that money.
They pass it all on, but a lot of them in here.
Yeah. Once you get to the point where you realize you're unworthy, tremendously unworthy, and it was just about him.
Yeah.
Well, there's this lady in Ringo that I've been talking to on the phone, and she's Pentecostal.
No, Lord.
And she just came out and asked me one day, well, Gerald, are you saved? And you know, I got in the deal about, well, what do you mean about saved, you know? And, oh, she says, well, I can remember the very moment that I was saved. And she says, everything turned around, and then I made the mistake of trying to explain something a little bit. And, boy, she just backed off, and you're wrong. I know, you know, that you've got to... You know, I told her, I said, well, you know, what did you do to have to be saved? You know, I mean, what did you do? What did it take? Did you go down to the altar? Did you, you know, what did you do? Well, she, you know, she didn't, that preacher saved her, you know.
And is she living her life any differently than she was?
She's miserable. She's a miserable woman. And she doesn't have what we have. And she doesn't know. She doesn't know it exists. She thinks I'm kind of freaky, which may be, but I mean, you know, she, well, I just don't believe the way you believe. Well, that's fine, you know. Prove it by the scriptures. Well, they can't. Okay, are we ready to start? Who wants to do the start off with the honors?
What do you say, just chapter one, all of them?
We want to start with chapter one. So we got several chapters of genealogy.
Well, I don't know. Y'all make it.
Whatever y'all want to do. I mean,
it's up to your daddy.
It's up to
me?
Yeah.
Well, I have to start with chapter one.
Huh?
Well, that's start chapter
Why?
One. What is in the Bible?
Oh, silly. No, I think Donnie probably, we got into this in another book one time, and we spent the whole time trying to pronounce names.
Yeah, I'm just saying we could start about chapter 10 and or so. That's where the storyline starts.
What do you think, Bill?
With Chronicles?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's yeah, you guys are driving the car. I'm just a passenger, but I don't know why we don't just I don't know. It depends on how boring you think the genealogies are. I think they might be interesting, but that's up to you.
Well, it's a lot of names, and you have to be able to pronounce them. And
well, let's take a vote. I just suggest it don't really matter to me.
Chapter one, raise your hand.
You mean start there?
Yeah.
I'm not ready to
start there.
I think there might be a lot of good
we're
stuff
do.
In those genealogies.
So we want people that can pronounce names good.
And that means Donnie gets to start it.
We're going to vote on that. No, we...
I'll start. Chapter 1. Adam, Seth, Enosh, Kenan, Mahalah. How to pronounce that one? Jared, Enosh...
That's Mahalalel.
Mahalalel?
Mahalalel. Mahalalel. That's his name.
Okay. Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, Noah. The sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The Japhethites. The sons of Japheth, Gomer, Magog, Madai, Avan, Tubal, Meshach, and Tiras.
Well, let me say a couple of things. Right. Gomer is identified in the prophets, and Joseph has made the mistake of believing the Cimmerians were Gomer, which is wrong because the Cimmerians don't appear in history at all. They're totally unknown to the Greeks before 600 BC. They can't be known as Gomer because the Cimmerians are the Cymri that are the children of Israel. Another reason why they can't be known as Gomer are because no people in any of the ancient Akkadian, Hittite, or Babylonian inscriptions are anywheres in the known world before the time of the Israelite deportations that were ever known as the Cymri with whom Gomer is wrongly associated with. So it's evident that while the Bible identifies certain people as Gomer and as Magog, that the actual descendants of Gomer and Magog historically did not call themselves by those names because they're not in any of the inscriptions. Madai are the Medes, Javan are the Ionian Greeks, Tubal and Meshach are the Moschi and the Tibarni of Greek histories who lived on lands adjacent to the Black Sea in northern Anatolia and in the Caucasus Mountains before the children of Israel were deported. They lived there, and the children of Israel eventually took those lands over. Some of those lands were known as Urartu, and Tyros is Thrace in Strong's Concordance. They're the Thracians of modern-day Bulgaria. So most of these people are identifiable in history, and most of those identifications, all of those identifications can be proven in ancient records, beyond doubt, except for Gomer and Magog, whom we really don't know who they are. Now, the sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz, the Jews call themselves historically Ashkenazi Jews, the Jews of the Russian steppe, the Edomites who went up into the Khazar Empire and converted the Khazars. Whether or not that connection is actually valid, it is up for grabs. Whether or not those Khazars are really from the tribe of Ashkenaz, I don't know if that was the Jewish scribes of the Middle Ages thought that they were Ashkenaz, but that's not a guarantee. It's not guaranteed that they were correct.
Okay.
Well, so is that what you were saying earlier about the Jews not being in the Old Testament? I mean, is that their stepping stone to tie themselves to Ashkenaz?
Well, there's no doubt that the Edomites, in pretty large numbers, who had with the advent of Christianity, were basically found themselves no longer able to function in the Byzantine Empire, and wanted their economic freedom and to be Jews. They had left the Byzantine Empire. Some of them went to Arabia, and all of a sudden Islam was founded, right? Some of them went up to Khazaria, and a great number of them had lived around Babylonia and in the Parthian Empire anyway. Some of them people of Judah, some of them Edomite and Canaanite impostors, and they had converted the Khazars to Judaism. And that is where, and they called these Khazar people Ashkenazi. Now, whether the identity of the Khazar people themselves is up for grabs. I mean, some learned people think that they were, that the word Khazar comes from that ancient word Kush, from which we get like the Hindu Kush Mountains, and a lot of the descendants of Ham did historically live in those areas, And George Moore, who wrote about the lost Israelites being the Saxon tribes all the way back in the 1860s, that was his belief. And it's based on, you know, on sound scholarly inquiry, but there's no proving it. It's no doubt the Khazars were originally of Aryan stock. They may have been a remnant of the actual tribes of the Scythians of Israel. They may have been a mix of any. You know, there were Indo-European or Indo-Aryan or Shemitic, if you want to get, you know, use the biblical term. Assyrians in the area and Persians in the area. They didn't all stay in Mesopotamia. A lot of them migrated up into the Russian steppe. There were Israelites in the area, the Scythians, who never left the area, who stayed behind. They may have been amongst them. The Khazar Empire was an amalgamation of tribes, and the Edomites, Jews, infiltrated it and mixed in with it and converted them to their religion. Once they were able to do that, they opened the door to intermarry with them. But at the same time, a lot of people that were known to us as the Turks were actually an Oriental people who migrated out of China and race mixed in with the Khazars and the Edomite Jews. So they had a while most of the Turks eventually adopted Islam as their religion, all of those people lived under this Khazar Empire of what was actually all of the land of what we know today as Kazakhstan, all the way to what we know today as Armenia and Azerbaijan. It encompassed the Black and the Caspian Seas. And that empire lasted for over 300 years, and what broke it up was the Golden Horde. And when the Golden Horde came, the Mongols came into the area and invaded. The Turks, who were probably more homogenous with the Mongols than they were with the Khazars and the Jews, the Turks, a lot of them enlisted with the Golden Horde and submitted themselves to them. And the Khazars and the Edomites of Khazaria were driven west into the Ukraine. They migrated west into the Ukraine, and that's where the so-called Russian Jews come from. But whether or not they were really Ashkenaz, I mean, the Khazars were identified as Ashkenaz by medieval Edomites, who therefore called themselves Ashkenazi Jews, because they had mixed with these Ashkenazis. And those people were sought to be Ashkenazis by the rabbis, but whether or not they really identified themselves as Ashkenazi, it is up for grabs. That they may not have at all. I've never seen literary evidence that they did, or inscriptional evidence. So that's why I think that the actual identification of the Aryan people that the Edomites mixed in with in the Khazar Empire, the actual identification is up for grabs.
Where does that word Aryan come from?
Well, a lot of people think it's a Sanskrit word for noble. Well, I think they're full of shit. That's my opinion. That the word Aryan was first used, according to Herodotus, by the Medes. He says that the Medes were the first Aryans. Now, I don't know if Herodotus was making a distinction, because he's writing 250 years after the children of Israel are settled in the cities of the Medes. He's writing 250 years after that. I don't know if Herodotus is really meaning the Medes, or is he meaning that the Israelites in Media were first called Aryans. That's up for grabs too, and that could be contested also. Now, I kind of think that the first Aryans were the children of Israel in the land of Media, because I believe sincerely that the word Ar-Yah is Mountain of Yahweh, Ar-Yah. And that's where I believe the word came from. But that's only my opinion.
did the Jewish nose come from?
I believe it came from the Hittites, the ancient Hittites and Canaanites. And there's inscriptional evidence of that nose in the ancient Hittites and Canaanites and in ancient Assyria, which had actually absorbed a lot of the Hittites and Canaanites and Amorites into their empire. The short, squat, broad, hook nose squat monster is basically a Hittite. From what I've seen and gathered from the inscriptions.
Well, see, most of them are identified as Ashkenazic now.
Well, yeah, right. Well, all those people. I mean, the Khazar Empire stretched that far. And if all of those Edomite Jews and Canaanite Jews went up into the Khazar Empire and had themselves a ball, well. Who knows what happened? A lot of it's out of our historical purview. It can only be guessed.
Yeah.
The history of the region is not that clear. It's not like Rome and Greece where they made copious records of everything that they did, right? That they just didn't, and if they did, it didn't survive.
Okay.
The Persians originally did, but most of their records didn't. And the original Assyrians, they were all white, and they did keep copious records. There's hundreds of thousands of Sumerian tablets dug out of the ground that haven't even been translated yet. There aren't enough translators.
And where are they?
They're all in museums and piled up on shelves somewhere. Museums and universities.
Well, you better get busy. You got a lot to do.
Yeah, well, I don't even read Assyrian cuneiform. I'm sorry. I might be able to learn it someday, but there isn't enough demand in that field for people like me, right? That ain't happening.
Well, they say language goes from a complex to the simple. They must have been a lot smarter than us back in those days.
Well, that cuneiform is pretty difficult to read. I've actually seen some of those tablets in the University of Pennsylvania Museum recently, and they are small. I mean, I got pictures on my website at Christogenia with real-life, everyday objects like a quarter that I held up against the tablet and took a picture so that we could get an idea of the size of the tablet. And they're very small tablets. You'd think when you see these pictures of them in books that they got to be a foot wide. Well, they're only 2 or 3 inches wide and jam-packed with these letters that are really just some kind of pictograph. Like each one of these cuneiform letters is a bunch of arrows, which are vertical or horizontal and crossed over each other, and they all have a peculiar meaning. And it's a pretty tough read. It really is.
We get all married to read them.
Well, I think we're reverting back, though, to that out of our language today, because I'll be honest with you, I can't understand one word of rap.
Well, that's not our language, right?
Oh, okay. All right.
Verse 6. The sons of Gomer, Ashkenaz, Riphath, Togarmah, sons of Javan, Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Rodanim.
Dodanim. Let me say that... Yeah, you know, Ashkenaz, Riphath, and Togarmah, they're spoken of in Jeremiah. They're spoken of in the end times context as being opposed to the children of Israel. And I think that those prophecies are really only identifying the bastard races that grew out of these people who are now mixed and calling them by the names of these original white races that had mixed with these aliens, the Arabs and the Mongols and the Turks, to become what they are today. I think that the Bible is only identifying them by those more original Adamic names so that we would know who they are, right? So that we would be able to look at history and know who they are. Because all these people are prophesied to be against us in the last days. And to me, that basically identifies the Muslim world and the Jewish world. Because these Ashkenazi Jews are really probably from an amalgamation of these tribes who mixed with Canaanites and Edomites. Aside from that, the sons of Javan, Elisha, is actually that there have been inscriptions that indicated Elisha was ancient pre-Israelite Cyprus, because the Israelite Phoenicians eventually had taken over Cyprus. So Elisha is pre-Israelite Cyprus, the island, and Tarshish is Tarsus in southern Spain, and Kittim was also on Cyprus. And Kittim is the oldest name for the island of Cyprus. And Cyprus is a big place, right? It could easily hold two tribes of the sons of Javan. And Dodanim, the ancient D and the ancient R, are very often confused. And Clifton wrote a thing about that when talking about Deuteronomy 23:2, or is it Deuteronomy 23? Deuteronomy 23:7, where it says that Edomi, which is Edomite, that we shouldn't abhor an Edomi, that the D and the R are confused there, and it should say Aromi, which is Syrian. And that's a big difference. Well, this is another place where the D and the R are confused. The Septuagint has here Rodanim, and the Rodanim are the Rhodians, the people of Rome, the people, the Greeks of the island of Rhodes, right? So all these people are also identifiable in history.
Okay, verse 8. The sons of Ham, Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. The sons of Cush, Seba, Hela, Phapta, Rama, Phapteka. The sons of Rama, Sheba, and Dedan. Cush was the father of Nimrod, who grew to be a mighty warrior on earth. Mizraim was the father of the Ludites, Anamites, Lehabites,
You want me to read that? Mizraim begot Ludim and Anamim and Lehabim and Naphtuthim and Pathrusim and Casluhim, of whom came the Philistines, and Kaphtorim. Or Kaphtor, which was actually in the ancient delta in the Egypt. These names, they have meanings that can be identified, like some of these names mean the people of the southern land, the people of certain regions in Egypt, and we see that we're told that they all came from the tribe of Mizraim. Mizraim, wherever you look in the scripture, In the Old Testament, and it says Egypt, the Hebrew word is Mizraim. Egypt is not a Hebrew word. Egypt comes from Aegyptus, which is the Greek word for Egypt. But it's always Mizraim wherever you see Egypt in Scripture. The sons of Ham, Cush, Mizraim, and Put, and Canaan. Of course, we all know who the Canaanites are. And Mizraim is Egypt. And Cush was actually the first great Adamic empire. And we're about to get into that, because Nimrod is a descendant of Cush. And he established the first Adamic empire, where tyrants or Adamite kings of the line of Nimrod ruled over their brethren. That would be a tyranny, right? And an empire. And that's what Nimrod founded, and that's why he's worthy of this mention. That's not to say that what Nimrod did is good, but it's what Nimrod did is just mentioned by the Bible. And Cush was a great empire that stretched from the border of Egypt all the way to the Indus River at one time. And that's the land of Cush that Moses went and found a wife. All he did was go from Egypt to Arabia, which was part of the what we know today as Arabia, which was part of the empire of Cush in Moses' time. And he got a wife from the the daughter of Jethro, right? Who was actually a Midianite by race. And that was why that was called the land of Cush, because at the time, that was all one great empire under control of these descendants of Cush through Nimrod, and that's why it was called the land of Cush. But the archaeologists today, they call that the first Babylonian empire. That's what it's called by archaeologists. They don't accept it as the empire of Cush. They call it the first Babylonian empire.
King James translators get Ethiopia.
Well, Ethiopia is the Greek name for Cush. Wherever you see Cush in the Hebrew Bible, where it's mentioned in a historical context later on in the books of the prophets, the Greeks actually called those places Ethiopia. And what's really interesting is that the Hebrews had two Cushes, and that's evident from the story of Moses, because Moses goes to the land of Cush and gets a wife, and that's where Jethro lives. And later on in the same book of Exodus, we're told that Jethro lives, you know, in what we know as Arabia, not in Ethiopia south of Egypt. Well, the Greeks had two Ethiopias. The Hebrews had two Cushes. The Hebrews identified a Cush in the south of Egypt, you know, below Egypt, and they identified a Cush as the land of the east in the time of Moses. Now, and also in the Genesis account, right, where the four rivers encompass the whole land of Cush, right, of Ethiopia. So we see two witnesses that the Babylonian Empire, because Moses is writing that description of his own time, that those four rivers that sprung from Eden encompass the whole, encircle the whole land of Cush. We see that Moses is describing how Mesopotamia was arranged in his time and not yet, you know, back in the time of the flood, but he has to use some kind of waymark that was historical to his people so they would understand what he was saying. And that's what I believe that passage means. We see that the Hebrews definitely clearly identify two Cushes, and the Greeks talked about two Ethiopias, the Ethiopia to the south of Egypt and what Herodotus and several other Greek writers call the Ethiopia of the east. The Ethiopia of the east is the Cushite Empire of Nimrod. And the Greeks, you know, they only use that term when they're writing of the earliest times. They don't use that term when they're writing of their own time, which helps prove that they are referring to the Cushite Empire, the ancient Cushite Empire of the time of Moses, the Ethiopia of the East. That they only use that term of their history up until the Trojan War. After the Trojan War, they no longer identify any of that land as the Ethiopia of the East, even though they do understand the Babylonians and the Assyrians and all of those people that dwelt in that former Cushite Empire. So Greek, you know, if you understand those terms as they're used in Greek, they also help prove the Hebrew Bible. And the word Ethiopia basically just means, the word Ahithops is the word that we get Ethiopia from, and that word basically just means shining face or sunburned face. That's all it means. And that could be proven through the component Greek words that make it up.
Verse 13. Canaan was the father of Sidon, his firstborn, and of the Hittites, Jebusites, Amorites, Girgashites, Hivites, Arkites, Anites, Abadis.
The Arvadite and the Zemorite and the Hamathite. Now these, I don't believe that these people are all descendants of Canaan. I think that these people are to a great degree that they represent tribes that the sons of Canaan may have mixed with, and that's why the language, it is like it is, right? Girgashite, instead of it's already a tribal name and not really a Hebrew proper name. You see what I mean? So I think that this might really represent people Canaan mixed with. It's evident in Genesis chapter 15 that there were also tribes of the Kenites and the Rephaim among the Canaanites, and there were other tribes mentioned that weren't even included in the genealogy of Adam in Genesis 10. And they, like the Perizzites and the Kenizzites, and they have to be alien races that the Canaanites mixed with. Pre-Adamic races, if you want to call them that. Perhaps Kenite races. Perhaps races that the Kenites and the Rephaim spawned. Who knows? We don't know because it's not recorded in our history. Another proof of the Bible is that Heth is said in the Bible to be the father of the Hittites. And that's why your version has Hittites there, but it actually says Heth in the Hebrew there. And Heth is... the Hittites dwelt in far northern Syria, in what today we would consider eastern Turkey, right, and not really Syria proper as we know it. But the Hittites had a great empire at one time, and their capital city is Carchemish. And if we understand that Ish means people in Hebrew, and that Car means city, and Chem is the real Hebrew form of the name Ham, then we see another proof that scripture is true, because the name Carchemish means in Hebrew the city of the people of Ham. And therefore the Hittites really did identify themselves with Ham, because that's the name they gave to their principal city. And that's what Carchemish means in Hebrew, the city of the people of Ham. Carchemish. And that was the ancient, and it's in the inscriptions, it's in the history books. Carchemish is a real place. It was long identified as the capital of the Hittite Empire, and it was a city that lasted for thousands of years until it was finally fell into decay and was destroyed. So there's no doubt that it actually existed, it actually had that name. So that's an indication to me that these biblical genealogies are accurate. When the we're told that Heth is a son of Ham, and then we see that it, in history and inscriptions for thousands of years, their city was Carchemish, and that can be broken up into three basic Hebrew words: city of the people of Ham. There's all kinds of proofs that all of this is certainly historical.
Okay, verse 17. The sons of Shem, Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Ud, and Aram. The sons of Aram, Uz, Hul, Gether, and Mesha. Arphaxad was the father of Shelah, and Shelah was the father of Eber.
Now this is... But these are the Shemites, right? And these people, if you look at the archaeologists and the anthropologists and the historians and what they say about the nations that these people made up, they'll tell you that these people are Indo-Aryan. But they won't accept their identity as Shemites. And it's absolutely amazing to me that the Jews claim to be Hebrews, and therefore they claim to be Shemites. But everywhere we see that word Elam in Scripture, we see the things attributed to Elam fulfilled by the people called the Persians in history. And when we look east to Persia, to ancient Persia, and even the Greeks attest to this, the principal district of ancient Persia was just the other side of the Tigris River from Babylonia, and it was called Elamais, after Elam. the Elamites.
Is that trilingual inscription up there in Iraq or wherever?
The Behistun Rock.
Yeah, that one. And one of those is the Elamite, isn't it? One of
those well, right. The people of Elam are the Persians of history, and that can be proven from inscriptions and from the Bible. There's no doubt. But if you ask anthropologists and archaeologists, they'll tell you that the Persians were Indo-Aryan. That's why their land is called Iran today. Iran is a contraction of the word that the Greeks and the Romans called Ariana, and that's Iran. Aryan land. That's what it meant. And it carried that name from the time of the decline of the Parthian Empire. It was called Ariana by the Romans and the Greeks, the people of the Byzantine Empire. So there's no doubt that the actual original Aryans that name was given to that land, and those people that were basically the principal inhabitants of the land at that time, and its dominating people, were the Parthians, along with the original Persian people.
Well, why do you think they're hated so today by the Jews?
Well, first, today they're no longer Aryans, right?
Right.
There's no doubt. The only reason why they're hated by the Jews is because they're devout Muslims, and devout Muslims don't believe in usury, and they're resisting the Jewish usury system, and that's what they're resisting, Gerald.
Right.
I'm not saying that Islam is good, but it does forbid usury, and all of these Muslim countries have been infiltrated and destroyed by Jews in the name of the global central banking system. It's no mistake. That's the real forces behind the Libyan invasion and the destruction of Iraq. So that they could get their money-grubbing banks in there and get their fingers on all that oil and put these people under a Western usury system. There's no doubt. Libya and Iraq were self-sufficient. And that's anathema to the Jew, right? Well. Anyway, wherever you see the Persians in history, you see Elam in scripture. Now, Asher, a lot of people will say the Assyrians. Some people will say when I say people, I mean these ancient archaeologists and anthropologists. Some of them will say, oh, the Assyrians were Shemites, and they're different from the Indo-Europeans, and some of them will identify them as Indo-Europeans. It's very confusing. It's confusing because they just don't get it, that the original Indo-Europeans and the original Aryans are Shemites. Arphaxad, his land can't be, you know, that name didn't come down through history, but that has to be the land of Padan Aram. It had, you know, later on the Aramaeans took it over, or part of Arphaxad's original land got named after the Aramaeans. Aram, wherever you see Syria in scripture, you see the name Aram. And the Aramaeans are the Syrians of history. And Strabo and other Greek writers attested that the Syrians were an entirely white people. And some of the families of that were later known as Greeks were said to have come from Syria.
I was reading on the internet before I come over here, just happened to be on the homepage, and CNN had an article on Rick Santorum on there against him. And the reason they're against him, and I didn't know it, but he wants to put America back under God's law. On the internet, on CNN's site.
Yeah, well, I'd be surprised at that, but that would mean just blowing up all of Washington and New York. That's the only way you put America back under God's law.
Yeah, but he's still an Israel first.
Oh, I know it, but I was surprised he even said that. CNN said the reason it hadn't come out because he hadn't been a factor, but they brought it out because he's a factor now, because they're calling it that.
Well, if he's an Israel firster, he should go over to Israel and put them under God's law first and see how that works out for him. That ain't going to work out pretty too good at all.
Probably is.
Well,
You have to define your God, though, first.
There you go.
They're under their God. Greenback. Kick everybody out.
Verse 19. Two sons were born to Eber. One was named Peleg, because in his time the earth was divided. His brother was named Joktan.
I got to talk about this, right? Because some of the most ridiculous assumptions come out of Genesis chapter 10, where it says that in Peleg's name the earth was divided.
Yeah, that needs an explanation.
Yeah, you know, some people say all the continents were together 6,000 years ago. Not even 6,000. This is, according to the King James chronology, this would be 4,300 years ago. Not even. And according to the Septuagint chronology, it would be not even 5,200 years ago. What this means, why it said that in his day the earth was divided, is explained in Deuteronomy 32:8. Deuteronomy 32:8 says that when Yahweh divided the land amongst the sons of Adam, that happened when? That happened right after the Tower of Babel event of Genesis chapter 11. And if you look at the Septuagint chronology, you'll find that Peleg probably lived right at the time of the Tower of Babel event of Genesis chapter 11, and that was when the land was divided up amongst the sons of Adam. And that's why it says that in Peleg's time the land was divided. It wasn't that the continents broke apart and floated across the water. That's just ridiculous that could happen in 4,000 years.
Yeah, I've argued that a bunch, but I didn't know how to argue it, but I didn't believe it.
In Peleg's time, the land was divided. That's talking about Deuteronomy 32:8, where in Peleg's time, the land was divided amongst the sons of Noah. When the people, after that Tower of Babel event, were split up, and you guys got this part, and we'll take this part, and they'll take that part. And that's how the land was divided. And it's real simple, right? It ain't got nothing to do with floating continents and dinosaurs and spaceships and any of that stuff.
That was Deuteronomy 1.
32. Well, Deuteronomy 32:8. I mean, let's go read it. That's a reference back to Genesis chapter 11. It has to be. It can't mean anything else. Deuteronomy 32:8. When the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, when He separated, when He divided the children of men, He set the bounds of the people, the boundary lines of the nations, according to the number of the children of Israel. Meaning that He left space for the children of Israel, and it sure as hell wasn't in Palestine.
I'm glad I can outrun him.
Yeah, you better hope so. All right.
So when you think about Peleg and the land was divided, well, the earth was divided. That same word means land. It's translated land thousands of times in the Bible, and that's the same land that was split up, as we just saw in Deuteronomy 32:8. That's what it's referring to. That's when they split the land up amongst themselves. It doesn't mean the continents were ripped apart. That's just crazy. That's these idiots that think the earth's 6,000 years old, and I don't even want to go there. It's a very simple, childish view of the Bible, right?
That's why a lot of people have turned off of Christianity because these are fables which don't make any sense.
Right, ridiculous Jew stories.
Yeah,
because they don't know the damned history. They don't know what really happened. That they don't read the Bible to see how easy it is to figure out. It ain't hard. It's just plain English. You got something spoken over here and something spoken over there, and they're both talking about the same thing. Gives you a more complete picture of the story.
But they read it in English and never look up the word and never look up any history of what's going on. They read the Bible in English.
Well, Genesis chapter 11, Tower of Babel event. God gets pissed, says all you people got to split up. Deuteronomy 32:8 refers back to God splitting the people up. In Peleg's time, the land was divided. Well, that's when it was split up. Peleg was born. That's about, we know from that about when the land was split up and divided amongst the sons of Noah. That's when the nations of civilization arose.
Okay, verse 20. Joktan was the father of Amodad, Sheleph, Hazar, Mapheth, Terah, Hedoron, Ozel.
Oh no.
Go ahead. What is it? Dikla?
Nope. Did you?
Obal. Abimael. Sheba. Ophir. Havilah and Jobab. All these were the sons of Joktan.
Now, Joktan, we only know about Joktan that he was somewhere in what we know today. It wasn't known as Arabia when Moses wrote, right? It really wasn't. But we know it today as Arabia. And Joktan was somewhere in southern Arabia. And these tribes, Joktan means he will be made little. And they sure as hell were made little. They were all mixed in with all these mud people. That's why they became Arabs, right? Now the... there's something really interesting here. Solomon's ships went to Ophir, and they brought back gold and monkeys and all kinds of stuff that you would think to see down in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa, below Ethiopia. And that's where Ophir's land must have been. Now, what's really interesting is that the Greeks never called Africa, Africa. They never called it what the Romans called it. The Romans called Africa Afer, A-F-E-R, was the original Latin word for Africa. And that has to be from the Hebrew Ophir. Africa is an ancient Greek, and it actually is Greek, form of what would be the genitive case of the word Afer if you wrote it in Greek. But the Greek writers themselves never used it in ancient times at all. But if you took Afer and you wanted to write the land of Afer in Greek, you would come up with something very much like Africus. Okay? And Africa and Latin, there were a lot of Greeks in Italy, and Latin has very heavy Greek influence. And Africa became the later Latin name, but the original Latin name was Afer. And that has to be the Hebrew Ophir. It has to be. There's no doubt. That could not have been a coincidence that the Latin speakers came up with that word, unless they got it because they used to be Hebrews, but unless they got it from the Hebrew. So that's Ophir is the original white holder of land which we know today as Africa. Not all of the continent, but at least a portion of it along its eastern seaboard, which is where King Solomon's ships must have went to Ophir. Now Sheba is identifiable and is an ancient remnants of an ancient kingdom, actually, in what we know today as southern Yemen, which is identified by archaeologists as the ancient land of Sheba, and that actually has a lot of credibility. But all these people are Arabs now. They're all mixed. I mean, they're not Joktan. They're not Adamic people anymore.
Hot down there too, that's why they
turned
black.
Well, you know something, that's what the ancient Greeks thought, but that just isn't the story. I mean, that's not reality, right?
No.
But some of the ancient Greek writers actually did believe that in their folly.
Bunch of white preachers believe it too.
Yep. A damn shame. Well, we got niggers in Canada for 400 years now, and they ain't turning white. And we got South African whites in South Africa for 400 years now, and they're not turning black. But there's only one thing that makes a man turn black, and that's putting his pecker in the wrong place.
What about brown?
Yeah, or any other color in between. Depends on how many times you dip it into the wrong paint can.
Let's see. Verse 28.
Well, real quick, a lot of people speculate that Jobab is Job of the book, right? And that seems to be plausible, and maybe that's why they went this far with Jokan's genealogy. Yeah, you know, the only one they went further with Jokan's genealogy is the only one they went further is Abraham, but they had to carry Abraham's genealogy further to get to the Hebrews and the Israelites, right? So, and that's plausible. It's not definite, but it is plausible, and that's all I'll say about it.
Okay. The sons of Abraham, Isaac and Ishmael, these were their descendants. Nebaioth, the firstborn of Ishmael, Kedar, Abdiel, Ibsen, Ishma, Duma, Asa, Shad, Tema, Datur, Naphish, and Edema. These were the sons of Ishmael. Sons born to Keturah, Abraham's concubine, Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shuah. Sons of Jokshan, Sheba and Dedan. Sons of Midian, Epher, Hanok, Abida, and all these were the descendants of Keturah.
Let me say a couple of things. But when you look at the sons of Ishmael, we see Duma and Tema, and it's very clear that the sons of Ishmael were living in the lands that later became the land of Edom. And the Ishmaelites and the Edomites, if you follow them in Scripture, you'll see that they spent an awful lot of time together, and Esau later took an Ishmaelite wife. He took a descendant of Ishmael for his wife. Well, when he saw that his father didn't like the Canaanite wives, he went and got himself a daughter of Ishmael. And the Edomites and the Ishmaelites, that they had a lot of concourse all throughout ancient history, right? And I would bet that an Edomite and an Ishmaelite, genetically, there probably ain't a damn bit of difference. That you may as well count them all as Canaanites. It's very evident from history and from the Bible. The children of Keturah, one of them is named Midian, and from that, and he's mentioned in Genesis chapter 25, and from that we see where Moses' wife came from. Because Abraham sent his sons with Keturah to the east. Well, that doesn't mean to China. That simply means east of the land where Abraham was, which is basically simply just the Arabian, what we know today is the Arabian Desert. And that's where Noah's father-in-law, Jethro, was found 300 or 400 years later. It's that simple. And those Midianites settled in that in the region of Sinai and stayed there, and they're there 300 years, 400 years later, so that Moses could go get a wife from them. Now whoever that wife was, she was acceptable to God. Many of the Midianites, when the children of Israel had later conquered, and this is evident in Numbers chapter 30, I believe. Well, when they later conquered the Midianites, they were told to slay all the men and all the women who had known a man, but they could keep the virgins to themselves. Why could they keep the Midianite virgins to themselves? Because they were a Shemite people, just like the Israelites were. Because they were descendants of Abraham. Because they had to be white, or else Yahweh wouldn't have told us that. And that's what they did when they destroyed the Midianites, because the Midianites allied themselves with Moab against the Israelites, but they were told of the Moabites and the other peoples they conquered to kill everybody. They were told of the Canaanites they conquered to kill everybody, but they were told of the Midianites that they could keep the girls that had not known a man.
it's pretty ridiculous to try to prove a doctrine by an example anyway. I had a conversation with a guy not too long back about that, trying to show that, there was some questionable blood lineages in the genealogy of Jesus. You know, and I told him, he said, you take something that's obviously displeasing to Yahweh, and then you don't even try to research out why. To me, it doesn't make any difference anyway. They were obviously acceptable blood lineage. You know, Rahab and Ruth and the Edomite, the Ethiopian that Moses took. And I asked him, I said, what about all the hundreds of cases of examples that, people lost their families and lost their heritage because of the fact that they raised me? You know, if you want to take an example and you can find three or four that you think, yet there's so many more examples in the Bible. If you're going to build a doctor off example, you ought to fail to the high side,
I did a program with Clifton back a couple of years ago called Women in the Genealogy of Christ. And every one of those women in Christ's genealogy do seem to test the race issue, and they can all be vindicated. Every single one of them are vindicated upon a thorough examination.
Absolutely. But you have to be able to do a thorough examination.
And I believe that's why God gave us those challenges. That's why he put those women in there. That's why he made examples of those women. To test us today.
You say, if you had 1,000 people that you shot in the head that died, and you could find one out there who survived when you get shot in the head, you don't say, well, get shot in the head, don't kill you. That's stupid. If you're going to build it by example, get shot in the head is going to probably get you. Same thing.
That's how you told me what that was about. I first met you. There was something in the Bible and it says, appears to be going against what Yahweh said. Just appears to be. Don't worry about it. Because it ain't true. I forgot how you put that. Because you know what he's saying for, right? You know there's no whores in fact. And if they come through, it ain't true. It goes against his grain. It goes against,
it's just something we don't understand. It appears.
But it goes against, just take it. It's true. Yeah. It's true. It just seems like it goes against the grain. What's all that in there? To make us run these rabbits sometimes, to try to make us put a little doubt, because how many people say that Jesus Christ has got whores in his family? You know it's not true. It don't even...
It's a dangerous thing, too.
It don't even make... because it goes against what he teaches us.
That's right.
And he lived by the same. Except for who there?
You see, they want to degrade Christ any way they can.
And we love them.
The pastors eat that shit up. That's why they're all dumb dogs.
And we love them.
That's why they're all dumb dogs. There's no doubt. And they eat that, they swallow that stuff down. Oh, Ruth was a Moabite. You see that? We could all race mix now.
Well, Moses went and got a black wife.
Yeah, that's absolutely crazy. That's nuts. Deodorus Siculus, I did it in my Genesis 10 paper. Deodorus Siculus, the Greek historian, described the Ethiopians, and he described them as a highly civilized, cultured people. And he contrasted them to the blacks of Africa, who he said were just savages. And he made a clear contrast in the third book of his Library of History. And he talked about how the blacks of Africa were savages and were basically animals.
They got books down at the Christian bookstore with nigger on the front of it. Supposed to be Moses' wife.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's one of the three kings that, went to Bethlehem was black. If you don't believe it, look at the nativity scenes that they got around.
Three wise men. One of them was black. And that's just absolutely crazy because I never met a wise man that was black.
You know, I was watching, I don't know if it was History Channel, anyway, one of the channels, and anyway, they had found this skull of a 12-year-old boy from Galilee dating about the time of Christ, you know. And anyway, they had these experts, they did a full, you know, construction of what, you know, this person would look like, you know. So good, right at the end, then they had to put the olive skin on it.
Yeah, it looked like white man until they colored it.
Oh, yeah, it did. It looked really good. I mean, you know, I can see it. They did a good job. Yeah. And they put that olive skin on there. I thought, that didn't even look right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that's kind of like trying to prove that race mix is okay because of Yahweh's not a respecter of persons, you know. But a fella today was telling me that, you know, and I said, well, you know, does Yahweh ever change? Well, no, he doesn't change. And I said, well, you know, was he a respecter of persons when he told him to go in and pipe out the Canaanites, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, well, you know, he's had a different time, you know. I said, well, you know.
Yeah, I'll be talking about that at length tomorrow night. I'm doing James chapter 1 and 2 tomorrow.
Okay.
James chapter 2 proves what a respecter of persons is. It's talking all about status and wealth. It doesn't mean anything about race.
Right, right.
If they're not white, they're not persons.
That's exactly right. That's where we mess up at. We've been fell for the idea that everything walk on two legs is an Adamite or an Adam man.
Said right there. It'll make you, it will stir. I mean, people close to you will carry a button. You can say that. Now, I'm telling you, when you say, no, that, it doesn't happen. When you come out of the book of Genesis, you people ain't in there.
That's it. It's over.
And,
well, there's some of them in there, all right, but it ain't good.
It's a
good place
stay
to
stay away from them. Yeah. But it's just, but our size is going down. Smaller and smaller. And I'm getting happier and happier because I know it's getting closer.
So the number of children will be the same as seeds. Only a remnant.
Okay.
Now we have here in Chronicles the sons of Jokshan are Sheba and Dedan. And I don't know if that's a scribal error, if that's a mistake, if that's confusion in the records, but they're also sons of Joktan, right? So it's that there is some confusion there, right? That they're mentioned in Genesis 10, Sheba and Dedan, long before there was a Keturah. So I think that that's probably an error by the compiler. And there are some errors by the compiler.
Okay, verse 34. Abraham was the father of Isaac. The sons of Isaac, Esau and Israel. The sons of Esau, Eliphaz, Reuel, Peush, Balaam, and Korah. The sons of Eliphaz, Teman, Omar, Lepho, Gatim, and Kenaz by Timnah. Amalek. The sons of Reuel, Nahath, Zerah, Shammah, and Mizah. The sons of Seir, Otan, Sobal, Gibeon, Ana, Ishan, Ezer, and Dishan. The sons of Lotan, Horai, and Homan. Timna was Lortan's sister. The sons of Shobal, Alban, Anahath, Ebal, Epo, Onam. Sons of Zibion, Ai, and Anna. The sons of Anna, Dishon. The sons of Dishon, Hemdan, Ishbal, Ithran, and Kiran. The sons of Ezer, Bilhan, Hey, man. Achan. The sons of Dishan, Uz, and Aram. These were the kings who reigned in Edom before any Israelite king reigned. Bela, son of Beor, whose city was named Dinhaba. When Bela died, Jobab, son of Zerah from Bozrah, succeeded him as king. When Jobab... When Jobab died, Hisham from the land of the Temanites succeeded him as king. When Husham died, Hedad, son of Bedad, who defeated Midian in the country of Moab, succeeded him as king. His city was named Aphith. When Hedad died, Simla from Ezrachel succeeded him as king. Samla died, Shoal on the river succeeded him as king. When Shoal died, Baal Hanan, son of Achmor, succeeded him as king. When Baal Hanan died, Hedad succeeded him as king. His city was named Paul, and his wife's name was Mehethabel, daughter of Matred, the daughter of Mizah. Hedad also died. Chiefs of Edom were Timnah, Avo, Japheth, Holabama, Ela, Penan, Kenaz, Teman, Megdiel and Aram. These were the chiefs of Edom.
Bet you're glad of that, aren't you?
Well, let me say a few things. You know, there's a lot of Israelites that have a lot of these names. There are other people, like this name Jobab, that's reported in other branches of the genealogy. It's the Genesis chapter 34 talks about 14 dukes of Edom, right? And evidently, the compiler of Chronicles, being a lot later in history, from the time, actually 1,000 years after Genesis was written by Moses, what was Chronicles compiled, approximately, maybe 1,100 years, he's trying to fill in the history of Edom down to his own time. So he has a lot more names, and he's trying to identify for us all the places where the Edomites had branched out into and inhabited, and their kings and their chiefs, and that's why this list is a lot longer than the list in Genesis. I think it's chapter 36 where the descendants of Esau are mentioned. We have to be careful, and one example I think is Caleb. I think it's Caleb. I could be wrong, but one of the patriarchs of the Exodus had an ancestor named Kenaz. And a lot of people point to that and say, oh, you see that? He was an Edomite, even though it explicitly says that he was of the tribe of Judah. And you still have your fools pointing at that saying, see that? Kenaz is one of the dukes of Edom. So he has an ancestor named Kenaz. So he must have been an Edomite. But we see a lot of names used by the Cain line in Genesis 4, that are also used by the Adamic line. We see a lot of names used by the line of Esau that were used by the line of Israel. That's simply because they had similar language. That don't mean that every time you could match two names up in the Bible that there's a connection. They used basically a very similar, if not the same language, different dialect maybe, and they used a lot of the same words as names because all Hebrew names were really Hebrew words. And the Canaanites and the Edomites followed in that same fashion, in that same tradition for the most part. The word Kenaz is only a Hebrew word that means hunter. How many people today in the United States are named Hunter in America? Does that mean they're all the same race? Hell no. But there's a lot of people named Hunter. So we have to be careful with these names when we're making identifications and evaluating who is who. And a lot of people, even in Christian identity, are awfully sloppy with a lot of these names.
A lot of different races are brown.
See, I started to say something, right?
Yeah. There's some Makings in the Israelite bunch, too. I'm just in the meeting. Yeah.
Well, 10 more weeks, we'll be done with those first 10 chapters of Chronicles, right? No, I'm just kidding.
You want to take chapter 2?
Sure. Y'all want to go to the pub?
What time is it?
10 minutes to 9? Or 8:47?
So what y'all want to do?
Yeah, anyway.
All right. Chapter 2. These are the sons of Israel: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Dan, Joseph, and Benjamin, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. Sons of Judah: Aaron, Onan, and Shelah, which three were born unto him of the daughter of Shua the Canaanites. Er, the firstborn of Judah, was evil in the sight of Yahweh, and he slew him. Tamar, his daughter-in-law, bare him Perez and Zerah. Sons of Judah were five. Sons of Perez: Hezron, Hamul, the sons of Zerah, Zimri, and Ethan, and Heman, Galkol, and Dara, five of them in all.
Now, Dara is Darda in 1 Kings 4:31, right? And Calcol and Darda, as I've explained several times these last few weeks, are actually, those names also appear again in Greek poetry as the founders of the Trojans and the Greeks of what's known as later on as Pamphylia and Lycia, which are along the southern coast of Anatolia. So we see these names. Two of these names appear in Greek history and the earliest Greek records, and that can't be a mistake. And Darda is the progenitor of the Trojans, and Calcol is the progenitor, or at least the leading figure of the early Greek, what were later known as Greek settlements of Pamphylia and Lycia, of later Pamphylia and Lycia. And that further identifies the Hebrews with the people of the Trojans and the Greek world.
Hell, my name. the sons of Zara, don't the Irish people claim some of the heritage from Zara?
Well, that red hand, right?
Right.
And yes, they do. And The problem is that the Irish history, I'm not saying that the connection isn't true. What I'm saying is that it's very hard to document because nothing is recorded in Ireland until after the 10th century, which is a damn shame, right?
Right.
It's all word of mouth until the 10th century.
Isn't that one of the supposedly heritage that the daughter of Zedekiah married into to get the kings of England, supposedly their lineage, back to David?
Well, right. That's the traditional story that Jeremiah brought the daughters of Zedekiah to Ireland and married them off to Irish kings, and then they moved into, you know, later Scotland. Their descendants moved to Scotland, and then became, you know, the English kings through James. Now the I don't doubt the veracity of that. It's just very hard to document, right? And most parts of it, and you know, there's a reason why that there has to be a divine reason why Ireland was never conquered by Rome. It's amazing that Ireland was never conquered by Rome, even though the Irish were well known to the Romans. A lot of the Irish fought as mercenaries for the Romans or for the British or various other peoples. The Irish were well known through trade to Rome. They were well known to be civilized people. Some of the Romans make the excuse that the Irish were savages and therefore they were never conquered by Rome, but that's just an excuse. It doesn't hold weight historically. The governor of Roman Britain from about maybe 90 to 100 AD in there was named Agricola, and Tacitus was his son-in-law. Tacitus, the great Roman chronicler, was his son-in-law. And Tacitus wrote that Agricola stood on the shores of England, of what we know today as Wales, and could see Ireland from the shore and imagined that the island could be conquered with only one or two legions. But it was never taken. The Romans never took it. And that, to me, has to be the hand of God in history. That for some reason, Ireland, and the Greeks of that time, I mean, Strabo wrote about the Britons of Ireland, he called them, the Britons of Iris. That's what he called the Irish. He called them Britons. The Greeks believed that they were the same race as the pre-Roman people of Britain. And he was right. They had to be the same race, and they had to come from the same place.
So it wouldn't have really mattered anyway, because Zedekiah's daughter would have still, because the sons had been killed, would have still been in the lineage. And if she would have married at least a full-blood Adamite, it wouldn't have really mattered if they were from Zara or not.
Well, absolutely not. But that is the story, that they were from Zara. I'm just saying that historically, yeah, you know, I'm a really pragmatic kind of guy, right? And I love to talk about everything that I could document and give citations for and tell you where I got it from. But I really don't like to talk too much about the stuff that I know isn't documented, that's based on a lot of it is based on medieval tradition or on interpretations of biblical prophecy, which I'm not saying don't hold any weight, but I like to give caveats, right? That it really can't, that we could see the connections in the Bible with the medieval, you know, accounts, and but we really can't pull a document out and say, look, this is it. Boom, there it is. There's the proof. We really can't do that.
Yeah. Okay. 7. The sons of Carmi, Achar, the troubler of Israel, who transgressed in the thing accursed. Sons of Ethan, Azariah, the sons of Hezron, they were born in the hymn, Jeremiel, and Ram, and Keluiah. Ram begat Aminadab, and Aminadab begat Ashron, Nashon, prince of the children of Judah. And Nashon begat Salma, and Salma begat Boaz, and Boaz begat Obed, and Obed begat Jesse. Jesse begat his firstborn, Eliab, and Abinadab the second, Shimra the third, Ethaniel the fourth, Radai the fifth, Ozem the sixth, David the seventh. His sisters were Zeruiah and Abigail, and the sons of Zeruiah, Abishai, and Joab, and Ashahel, three. Abigail begat Amasa, and the father of Amasa was Jeter, the Ishmaelite. David was the eighth.
Now this Ishmael, he's a descendant of somebody named Ishmael, which means God will hear, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he was a descendant from Ishmael, the son of Abraham, right?
Right.
Just like I said before, that these names were used over and over again in this culture.
Why is David the seventh son instead of the eighth?
I don't know if he. I really don't remember if he was supposed to be the seventh or the eighth, right? I honestly don't remember that.
Pretty sure in Kings he was the eighth, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know.
All right, 18. And Caleb, the son of Hezron, begat children of Azubah, his wife, and Jerioth. Her sons were these, Jesher, Shobah, and Ardan. And when Azubah was dead, Caleb took him into Ephrath, which bare him Hur, and Hur begat Uri, and Uri begat Bezaleel. And afterward, Hezron went into the daughter of Micah, the father of Gilead. He married when he was 80 years old, and she bare him Segub. And Segub at Jair, who had 23 cities in the land of Gilead. He took Gersher and Amorim and the towns of Jair from them, with Kenneth and the towns thereof, even 80 cities. All these belonged to the sons of Makar, the father of Gilead. And after that Hezron was dead, Caleb, Abarai, Hezron's wife, bare him Asher, the father of Tekoa. Sons of Jeremiel, the firstborn of Hezron, were Ram, the firstborn, and Bunai, and Orin, and Ozan, Aya. Jeremiel also had another wife whose name was Athara. She was the mother of Onam. And the sons of Ram, the firstborn of Jeremiel, were Maaz, and Jamir, and Eker. And the sons of Onam were Shammaiah and Jada. And the sons of Shammaiah, Nadab, and Abishur. The name of the wife of Abishur was Abihail. She bare him Abdan and Molid.
Okay, I made an error before. Kenaz is Caleb's brother, right? And that's a lot of that's the Kenaz a lot of people in Israel Identity even tried to claim was an Edomite, and he was Caleb's brother. But he was just another man named Kenaz, right? Now, you were right about David in Samuel. In 1 Samuel 16, it says explicitly that David was the eighth son. That David's father Jesse had offered 7 sons to Samuel, and he passed them all over and told him there was one other son, the younger son, and that's the one he wanted. So here it says 7, and that's, yeah, you know, mistakes like that in Chronicles help prove to me that what I said at the beginning tonight, that Chronicles is basically a compilation of records, legitimate real records, by a much later hand. And the hand of man always makes mistakes, right?
Right. Well, could it be that one of the sons would have been left out, maybe have died without having any children or something like that, or? I don't know.
Well, why would he not be counted? I think when we're talking about we're talking about the sons of Jesse, and why wouldn't it just say 8? I don't know. I can't, you know, it would only be conjecture on my part to guess why it says 7 here and not 8, right?
The text notes in my Bible, and it's doing this in several spots, just indicating that the author's purposely doing this. Reason. I don't know if they're right, but he's saying that here, you know, that he's doing it just for the number 7.
Well, it's clear that things like that were done elsewhere. I mean, in Matthew counts 14 generations from here to there and there to there, and it's clear that, you know, that's the ones that he chose to list, but there were more that he chose not to list, right?
Right.
For one reason or another. Maybe they weren't worthy of being listed, but most of them were horrible men anyway. Most of the kings of Israel and Judah were The most wicked men imaginable, some of them. And that's, you know, that's what, that's our example. We were told when we wanted kings that we were going to get it, and we did.
Well, that's the same thing that happens, I believe, in churches. You know, the very nature of humility makes you easy to manipulate by people who are not humble. You know,
right.
the preachers are so cocky and so sure of themselves, and people sit there and listen to it because of the, I think it's a, I don't know if it ain't a character flaw, but it's a characteristic of Israelites. A lot of times they'll, you know, like sheep, they'll be led pretty easily. All right, verse 30. The sons of Nadab, Seled, Apaim, and Seled died without children. And the sons of Apaim, Ishi, the sons of Ishi, Shishan, and the children of Shishan, Aliah. The sons of Jeter, the brother of Shammai, Jeter, or Jeter, and Jonathan, and Jeter died without children. These are the sons of Jonathan, Peleth, and Zaza. These are the sons of Jeremiel. Now Shisha had no sons but daughters. Shisha had a servant, an Egyptian, whose name was Yaha. And Shisha gave his daughter to Yaha, his servant to wife, and she bare him Attai. And Attai begat Nathan, and Nathan begat Zabad. Zabad begat Eflah, and Eflah begat Obed, and Obed begat Jehu, and Jehu begat Azariah, and Azariah begat Hazael, and Hazael begat Elisha, and Elisha begat Sisamiah, and Sisamiah begat Shalem, and Shalem begat Jechemiah, and Jechemiah begat Elishamiah. And the sons of Caleb, the brother of Jeremiah, Miel, were Mesha, his firstborn, which was his, the father of Ziph, and the sons of Marishel, and the father of Hebron, and the sons of Hebron, Korah, and Tapua, and Rechem, and Shema. And Shema begat Rahem, the father of Jorkoham, and Rechem begat Shammai. And the sons of Shammai were Maon, and Maon was the father of Beth-Zur, and Ephah, Caleb's concubine, bare Haran, and Mosah, and Gazez, and Haran begat Gazez, and the sons of Jadia, Regim, and Jotham, and Gershom, and Pelet, and Ephah, Ephah, and Zoph, Ma'akab, Caleb's concubine, bare Sheber, and Tirahon. She bare also Sheath, the father of Madmana, Shiva, the father of Magbina, and the father of Gibeah, and the daughter of Caleb was Aksha. These are the sons of Caleb, the son of Hur, the firstborn of Ephrathah, Shobal, the father of Kiriath, Yerim, Yeriah, Selah, the father of Bethlehem, Hareph, the father of Beth Gadar, and Shobal, the father of those Beth names. That looks like bread there.
Well, Beth means house, right? Bet, Betta. And Bethlehem means house of bread. But that's, Ephrathah was an ancient word for Bethlehem. That's why David is called an Ephrathite.
Right, right. Okay. Jobal, the father of Kiriath, Jerem, and sons Horiath, and half of the Manahethites, and the families of Kiriath-Jerim, the
Kiriath-Jerim really just means city of forests, right?
Okay.
It's on the northern boundary of Judah. It's on the boundary between Judah and Benjamin, actually.
Puhites, Shumathites, Ishraites, of them came Zariathites, and Eshtalites, the sons of Salma, Bethlehem, and the Nephrathites, Ataroth, and the house of Joab, and the half of the Manassehites, the Zorites, and the families of the scribes who dwelt in Jabez, the Tirathites, and the Shemathites, and the Succothites. These were the Kenites that came of Hemath, the father of the house of Rechab.
Now, here again, we see family names kind of blend into geographical names, right?
Right.
And then right smack in the middle of these geographical names, we see what? The Kenites?
Kenites of Rechab, yeah.
And they're the scribes. And this Rechab is not the Rahab of the tribe of Judah, right? This Rechab is a Kenite line. And it shouldn't be confused with the Rahab. There were several Rechabs or Rahabs in Scripture.
Wasn't there some of the giant lineage in that house?
Well, yeah. The Kenites had mingled with the Rephaim. There's no doubt. And that they're mentioned together in Genesis chapter 15. And the Rephaim are the sons of Rapha the giant, who was one of the Nephilim. One of the fallen ones, right?
So before we wrap up on this chapter, can you go back to verse 7 and give a brief expose on that?
Well, Rechab, this is mentioned again in the book of Jeremiah, right? And the Rechabites were Kenites, and they're called Kenites in the book of Jeremiah. They're Kenites living in Judah.
Well, no, Bill. Verse 7. Go back to verse 7 on the previous page.
Oh, you know something? I was looking for Rechab and Alma. I'm in Jeremiah. I'm sorry. I didn't realize I switched.
That's okay. Chronicles 2, verse 7.
Yeah, I'm looking for it. I got to get back there. And the sons of Carmi, Achar, the troubler of Israel, who transgressed in the things accursed. He was the man that kept the silver and the gold in the Babylonian garment, remember? And he was destroyed. He, according to Clifton, and I think it's a pretty good theory, he wanted to be the first Israelite banker, basically. And he had the Babylonish garment, and he had the money, and there were a bunch of Israelites slain, but because he kept the money and the Babylonian garments from Jericho, when Jericho was looted, and Yahweh wanted everything in Jericho to be destroyed. So that's why he's mentioned here as the troubler of Israel who transgressed in the thing accursed. Because all of Israel suffered because this man took that silver and that Babylonian garment and hid them in his tent, right?
Okay, all right.
Well, that's him that they're talking about.
Is that my control marker? I think it's safe to say that. He didn't own up to it either. Didn't they have to cast lots for him?
Well, yeah, but when they found him, they killed his whole family. They stoned them all, right? That they burned all his stuff and they killed his whole family.
So I can't be descended from him.
Unless one went off when they wasn't looking.
Uh-oh. Ended up in Georgia.
Okay, well, we had a good study, kind of hard. We got through two chapters.
Well, we covered a lot of ground and only got a few of the details, right? I mean, you can talk about this stuff all day.
Definitely gonna. I got this on CD, so I'm gonna be listening to the pronunciation this week. Mm-hmm. I'll be ready next week.
All right. It won't
okay.
Be no good listening. I can't pronounce it anyway.
It's pretty good. Well, we thank you, and we'll try to listen tomorrow night.
Okay, James, tomorrow night. I'm really going to hope to redo everything I did with Eli. I want my own entire New Testament commentary in audio in podcasts on my website, right? I mean, that's going to be my goal, and I'm going to go through the New Testament until I get it. And I might not do it right the first time. I might have to do it again, right? Nah, I hope to do it as well as I can. That's all. So tomorrow night, it's the Epistle of James. And then I'm going to do one of the minor prophets after James, and then I'm going to do Peter, and then I'm going to do one of the minor prophets after Peter, and then I'm going to do Jude, which we just did here, right? And then I'm going to do Luke. And I'm hoping, Yahweh willing, that while I'm on the road seeing you guys and Clifton and a few others this summer, that I'm doing Luke, because I know the material pretty well, and I don't have to spend a whole day and a half or a day in preparation for a program, right? I got copious notes on Luke, and I'm sure I could do a good job without all of the preparation that I usually require to do a program. So it would be ideal to do Luke and or Acts while I'm on the road. So that's my plan.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
God willing.
Okay, well, thank you a lot. We'll see you, Lord willing.
You bet. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Good night, Bill.